Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Welcome, and this is AJAG PD Pod Season 2, Episode 3, 4. 4, Episode 4. And today, our guest is Eric Peeney from Ryan LLC, and our topic is going to be government grants. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Ivan. Jonathan, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
So why don't I let you start it off? Tell us a bit about yourself and a broad overview of Ryan, and then we can start getting into some details.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you were asking when I first introduced myself today, but I came from a real estate background initially at a university, and I did that for a few years before I took an interest in the corporate world, more specifically on the tax and government funding side. So I've been in the industry now for going on 4 or 5 years, been with Ryan for a couple of years now. I joined, coming up on my 2-year anniversary, joined in July of 2023. So I'm on the government funding team at Ryan. But again, there's a few other different practice areas that they have as well. But primarily, the company was built off of a sales tax recovery firm, but property tax recoveries, a SRED tax credit division, and then the government funding division that I'm in make up the 4 major practice areas for them. So.
Interesting.
Is it strictly Canadian or is it?
No. So the firm is U.S. based, but they're global. What I deal with is specifically Canadian, but we do have partners. So if there are companies that we deal with that are international, we can make referrals, whether that's to Europe or to the U.S. For anything from grants or property tax, customs, things of that nature. So,
All right.
Yeah.
So your process. Somebody who comes to a company, firstly, are these individuals, sole proprietors, corporations? Who do you deal with?
For the most part, they're corporations. You know, we have some sole proprietors that come to us, but we always encourage incorporation just because as a sole proprietor, it can be limiting in terms of what you qualify for on the government funding side. Typically, what our process involves is when we connect with a company, we'll kind of go over what their budget looks like over the next 12 to 24 months to create a funding strategy. The thing about government funding is that it's all about timing. So, you know, spend is always forward facing. If companies have already incurred costs for a project, then that's a wash. We can't go and receive funding for that. So 99% of government funding is all forward facing.
So what do you mean by timing? Tell us about timing. So, is there a routine?
Yeah, so I mean, there's busy seasons in the government funding landscape. Typically, spring and fall are the busy times, and that's when the most programs come out. So, what we have to do, based on their projects, is identify timelines to target programs that we know will typically be opening at certain points of the year. And there's some programs that we, for the most part, spring and fall, but some programs that we know, hey, this program opens up in the summer every year. So here's what we've seen. Here's what your budget looks like. You know, here's what a timeline would look like. Because typically, again, like I mentioned, you can't incur costs until, for the most part, until you're approved for the program. Sometimes it's after you submit the application. So We work with those timelines because the turnaround from application to approval can be anywhere from, you know, a few weeks for some of the hiring programs to 3 to 4 months for some of the large CapEx programs.
So that must make it difficult for a lot of companies to operate around that if they're counting on a grant. How do you, you know, which comes first? You can't stop everything waiting.
No, that's why it's better to proactively have these conversations. I can't tell you how many meetings I've had where clients say, oh, I wish we had this discussion 6 months ago, right? So the earlier the better. It's never too early to have a conversation about it, because again, we're going to be going over what are your plans for the next 12 months, the next 24 months, and that way we can plan ahead for that, right? So there's never a bad time to have that conversation, but like I said, countless times I've had people say, hey, I wish we had this conversation 6 months ago because we just bought this, this CNC machine for my company, it was $250,000. That would have been a good fit for this program, but it's too late now, right? So we can help navigate around that. Sometimes projects start and they've put a deposit in for a piece of equipment. It's all about matching up the invoices. So we might lose the deposit for the grant, but if the invoice falls into the right time frame where we can start incurring costs for the program, then we can make it work. So it's all about timing, most companies don't have, the resources or the time to go and worry about these things. I mean, they're too busy running their company, right? So we take a proactive approach in identifying those programs and working on timelines with them. So,
right. So why don't you give us a few examples of types of grants, types of businesses, specific areas where people can start thinking about recognizing that there might be some opportunities.
Yeah.
As you do that, I was just thinking back a couple of years ago in my own practice. Now, Ryan bought MentorWorks.
Yes, they did.
So people watching might be familiar with MentorWorks, and that was my connection. And I had 7 or 8 co-op students that they found funding for. And in addition, I'm mentioning this only for those in public practice that might be thinking during busy season, maybe it's not a bad idea to have a couple of extra hands around. And I did that for several years, and it was pretty substantial funding in addition to the credit I got.
Absolutely. I mean, you can get $5,000 to $7,000 per term per co-op student, and there's no limit to the amount of co-op students that you can take on. We call those low-hanging fruit programs because there's always funding for the co-op hires. It's relatively easily accessible. It's a quick turnaround time. And again, it's one of those few grants that we can actually backdate. So if you've had a student start, say they started May, we're going to apply, they started May 1st, we're going to apply May 15th. We can actually backdate the application to have the funds received from the actual start date for them. But, I tell my clients to keep in mind 3 terms for co-op hiring: summer, fall, and winter term. And to be proactive again, though, because you do have to have the candidate identified.
Yeah.
We won't be able to find that for you, but if you have the candidate identified, you have the resume, you have the job description, then we have the information we need to proceed. So
we were going through co-op programs. And so some of the universities they were looking to place.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, yeah. And some people don't know where to begin with the co-op hires. I let them know every post-secondary institution has a co-op office. So call them up. And if you don't know where to begin, say, hey, this is the role I'm hiring for. Do you have anybody, in a program that kind of matches what we're looking for?
Yeah. And I went to a couple of different schools. One of them was business and BCom program, but I went to another school because we were doing some marketing, and so I wanted a co-op out of a marketing program, so we had funding for that. So it wasn't hard.
No, it's relatively easy, and there's so many different streams. So the way that it works for co-op funding is it's the funds are dispersed federally, but they're funneled through different various associations regionally throughout Canada. The roles are pretty much endless. I mean, there's general co-ops, there's digital co-ops, apprenticeship co-ops, if you name it, they probably have an open stream. So, yeah.
So what other, like Ivan was saying, what other areas?
Yeah. So we can generally group funding programs into 4 different buckets. So hiring, of course, the co-ops, hiring and training, and there's great training programs available as well nationally, funneled through each province. But hiring and training would be one bucket.
In what areas of training?
Pretty much anything. The ones that are the most prominent are general training. So if you're looking for anything, customer service, sales training, software training, leadership training, things of that nature, then there's great programs. You know, you can get 50 to 83% of training costs covered, up to $10,000 per employee. Right. So yeah.
And apprenticeships and things, is that a different type of?
It would be. That'd be on the hiring end. And so there's certain apprenticeship programs that would be separate from the co-op programs, where you can receive a little more back. Other than the $5,000 to $7,000 a month per term that I mentioned before. But yeah, there's some great apprenticeship programs.
I'm just thinking with the housing crisis and now the big push to build homes, and it's going to affect the trades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there government money now behind that, where some of the clients we work with need to know about that type of thing?
Yeah. So there's some great apprenticeship programs available. Those ones are a little more less common and come out less frequently, but they can provide quite a bit more money, up to $30,000 a year usually for those ones for apprenticeship programs. So yeah. And again, the housing thing, something that we'll probably get into later on in the podcast, but it's been a huge focus of the government over the past year. So we've seen a lot of programs centered around the housing situation.
So hiring, what else?
Hiring, training, R&D would be the next bucket.
Okay. It's
research and development. If you're developing something new, whether it's a product or a technology or a service that's new and innovative for the purpose of commercialization. So that's one of the things I like to differentiate between the SHRED tax credit and the R&D grants. So SHRED tax credit is a backwards facing tax credit for any technical, anything that you're doing technically that you have to overcome a challenge for your operations, right? The differentiating factor between that and an R&D grant would be commercialization. So if you want to target an R&D grant, it would have to be, the end result would have to be commercialization of that new technology or innovation. So
Ryan would do that type of work?
Yeah.
They can help with the documentation and all of that for SHRED claims.
So we do have a SHRED division. And actually, when you're targeting an R&D grant, it's good to be working with the same firm for SHRED, or even if we can make it work either way, but to at least be connected and talking to the firm that's doing the SHRED claim, because there are some double dipping situations where you have to navigate around, just because an R&D grant is forward facing. So you typically will go and will seek funding for the 1 year of the R&D project that they're working on. Whereas later that year, after that happens, they would go and claim SHRED back on their year end, right? But you can't go and claim SHRED back on someone's salary that we just received a full grant for, right? So there are certain situations that we have to navigate around to ensure that we're not double dipping or doing anything that we shouldn't be. So
hiring, training, R&D.
R&D. CapEx would be the next bucket. So of those large capital purchases or large capital projects that companies have, whether that's through, large software implementation, equipment or machinery purchases, leasehold improvements to the buildings, things of that nature, there's programs that will go and support those costs. Now, those large CapEx programs typically come in the form of loans, sometimes a mix of loan and grant, but, usually those programs have a minimum project budget of, the lowest one I've seen is about $250,000,
right,
but a sweet spot, all the way up to $10 million. So usually those come in the form, whether it's federally, provincially, come in the form of a loan. Some of them are interest-free. Some of them are interest-bearing with a forgivable portion. Rarely do we see full grant for those large CapEx programs. So that's the third bucket.
Is there any particular industry that they favor for those?
No.
Or is it across the board?
It's across the board. I say that probably manufacturing would be, the biggest industry where we see those types of programs utilized, but it's not eligibility wise is not limiting to just that. So yeah,
and those are also forward looking,
all forward looking, all forward looking. So those are the example that I said before, where someone purchases a piece of machinery or equipment, you can't go in and recoup those costs via the grant. So that those are those programs that we really have to work with our clients to work on timelines, work out prioritize with them, what do you want to spend first, what are your main priorities in terms of you want to implement this first, what's the next thing you want to implement, because these programs aren't a one and done purchase as well. Typically the time frame that they want to see for those projects are 2 to 4 years. So if we have a client that comes and says, well, I just have this one off, you know, ERP system that I want to implement, you know, it's going to take 6 months to purchase, implement, and then train our staff, it wouldn't make for a strong CapEx application for those programs. They want to see other elements added to that project to make it more robust. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for even a like I'm thinking smaller businesses that might be implementing CRM packages and things like that, is that too small for these types of things?
It would be, and that's not to say that there wouldn't be one-off programs that come out that would support just a smaller implementation in that you know $20,000 to $30,000, $50,000 you know range, but for some of those federal provincial programs, the reoccurring ones that we usually see every year, that would make for a too small of a project. So
I just think for some smaller businesses that are hiring a couple of, you know, summer students or something or other, is there any funding as they're, you know, implementing systems and things like that. So, but yeah, you're talking about bigger.
Yeah, yeah. There is a, you know, for implementing systems, there is a smaller program, at least Ontario-based. There was a federal one you might have heard of before called CDAP, and the Canadian Digital Adoption
Program. Oh, right. Yeah.
They left $2 billion on the table for that one. And they put it towards, they shifted it over to AI last year. They made that big push for AI last year.
Wow.
There's a provincial one here in Ontario called DMAP, which is actually open right now. And what that is it's a 50% up to $15,000 to go and do like a digital audit and assessment on, you know, areas of improvement. And they have a preferred vendor list that you need to use that you can see right on the DMAP website and everything. But that would be maybe something that would be more catered to, you know, a smaller, you know, company that doesn't have that huge, large CapEx project budget, but they're just looking to kind of revamp their online presence or, you know, anything digitally.
I'm thinking of professional firms like law firms or accounting firms that are exploring AI and not knowing, for example, where to go with it or how it can impact workflow.
Yeah, absolutely. That could be an avenue for that. And there's also, which we'll probably see again this year, one federal program called the Regional AI Initiative, RAII. That I wouldn't be surprised if that opened up in the next month or so. We had an intake for that last fall. But that had two streams, one stream for commercialization. So if a company is going and creating and something that's AI-based for the purpose of commercialization, but also they had an adoption stream. So if a company is going to looking to just adopt AI usage for their operations. So that could be an avenue as well. And that didn't have, didn't require a huge, huge budget either. So yeah, something that should probably be opening up in the next month or so. I would be surprised if it didn't, because I know that there's going to be an AI focus this year for sure too.
Yeah. And CapEx, anything else?
And then the last bucket would be marketing and export. So if companies are looking to, expand their operations internationally, there's some programs available for marketing purposes, whether that's, new product design, attending trade shows internationally, travel for employees for business meetings, hiring consulting firms for market research, feasibility studies, lead generation, things of that nature. So the main program in that category would be called Can Export. A lot of people are familiar with that program. Usually rolls around once annually, like clockwork, year over year. So that's been around for quite a while now. And the intake for that one just passed. So that was May 31st that one closed. So
it sounds like, you know, any business would need to consult with you guys or similar business, you know, just to become aware of what possible types of programs are available, as they move forward in their operations. It's the kind of thing where we were talking, you know, it's very poorly publicized by the government. They're making money available, but nobody knows about these programs unless you know, they talk to someone like you who says these things are there.
Yeah.
You have to go search them out. Otherwise you'll lose out. So
how do you keep people up to date on these things?
Yeah. So, I mean, we take a proactive approach with our clients. If we've already met with them and they're in our system, then they'll get, they'll be flagged anytime a new program come out that matches eligibility and industry criteria for them. But we also have a newsletter as well that we encourage everyone to sign up for that comes out weekly with program updates. Just because, like what you alluded to, Ivan, You know, they don't publicize when these programs are going to open up. So, we, you know, the funding, the budgets for the provincial and federal government are released. So we know where the funds are going to be made available, but we don't know what programs specifically are going to be made available or when they're going to open up. And that was the example that I mentioned before, where that the one program for the automotive sector opened up yesterday. There's no announcement. You know, you just, if we have team members that go and basically refresh the website or try to get information from our contacts that we have there. And until it opens up, we have no idea, right? So yeah, and that's the thing about timing as well, is that these programs are usually only open for, you know, 3 weeks to 5 weeks before they close. So if you're not on top of it, it's easy to miss.
Right. So you need to have a good network of moles inside.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Inside the government.
We're always trying to massage our relationships with them, whether it's through the associations that the funds are funneled through or through our government contacts that we have ourselves. They're usually pretty tight-lipped, but if we prod them enough, then sometimes they give us a little bit of, you know, some breadcrumbs. So
how do you work with accounting firms? Do you, or what's the...
Yeah, absolutely, we do. I mean, we work closely with accounting firms, and there's sometimes a bit of an overlap with some of Ryan's services and what accounting firms do. But oftentimes, they'll usually work with us when their clients are looking for something specific, when they have a project in mind, because, again, I think that we wrote over 80 different programs last year, and a lot of them are niche, right? So a lot of them are unknown. So we work with accounting firms when they realize an opportunity for their clients looking for funding for something sometimes very specific, that we can go and find programs that match what they're looking for. So yeah, I tell people all the time, it's a full-time job. We have two or three full-time team members that are pretty much just solely like staying on top of, again, what's around the corner, where's the funding being allotted, how much funding is left, what programs are coming up. So yeah,
did you get funding for those team members?
Huh? Did we? I mean, if we didn't get funding for those team members, we should though.
You might want to think about that. Yeah.
So how are you compensated for? Is it straight percentage of the grant, or
it's a mix? It varies. So we do offer contingency fees for a lot of the programs that we write. So we deal primarily with federal and provincial programs. With provincial programs are the ones that we offer those contingency fee or success-based fees on, taking a percentage of the approved funds. There's lobbying laws in place for federal programs that don't allow that. So for those federal programs, we typically work on an hourly or a flat fee basis. Yes. And that can range entirely based off of size of the program that we're working on. You know, you have smaller programs like the co-op programs, where it'd be a very, very small fee. Or all the way up to those CapEx programs where, you know, it could require 80 to 100 hours of writing time for those applications. They're very large. So, but yeah. So it's a mix, and it would depend on the program and depend on whether it's a federal or provincial program.
So, right. Yeah. So companies, are taking a bit of a risk in the sense that they could engage you. You'll be paying a fee with no guarantee of success, whereas... it is a contingency.
Absolutely.
And on the other side.
And what I say to try to ease the mind of our clients, I mean, it comes down to our qualification process. And we often say no more than we say yes. So when we first go and engage with, you know, a prospect or a client looking to go and take advantage of a new program, if their project isn't, you know, we'll have two or three meetings first before we even formally engage, just to make sure that their project is the perfect fit for the program that we're looking to pursue. Even after we formally engage, usually we have a kickoff meeting where we'll go into more detail on the budget, project scope, business case. If at that time my team sees any red flags where they think, you know what, this wouldn't make for a competitive application at this point, they'll recommend not moving forward at no cost right there. So our winning percentage across the board is usually hovering between 80 and 85%. So that gives our clients some peace of mind, and we won't take it on unless we truly believe that they're going to win. So,
Very good. Accountants accountants in industry or public practice like checkmark or checklists.
Yes.
So we put a little bit of a checklist together, and tell me what you think of our checklist. Firstly, around clues that an accountant looking at a file might be being aware of as they're working through a file.
Yeah.
So. First one, new hires. Has there been a large increase in payroll? So Eric, you tell me, is this a good checklist?
This is a great checklist. I mean, anytime that you see a company, with large payroll increases, it means that that business is good. And that means that
too late at that point? If now we're looking at historical information, that's the question. I guess that's why I'm.
Yeah, not too late at all. For hiring as well. I mean, hiring is one of the few programs that I mentioned that we can always backdate on the applications, right? So, if you do realize a little late, we're looking to hire X amount of people this term, but some of them already started. That's okay. But that's a great trigger for sure.
Next one, capital asset purchase. Are we seeing increases in capital asset?
Yes.
Too late or not?
It would be too late for that. But again, I always look at, I view that as kind of trending upwards, right? I mean,
but it's a question an accountant could ask to a client saying, are you planning on any big, doing this year end, is there anything coming at us that you need to be aware of?
Absolutely. And those are the ones. And again, because, those capital asset purchases, that equipment, that machinery, leasehold improvements, those are really expensive. So those are one of the ones that we've always like to navigate well ahead of time, because again, forward facing for those programs, nothing, retroactively. Yeah.
Next one on our checklist, R&D activity, software development, prototypes.
So this is interesting, actually, because if the project has already started for R&D, there's no time. Typically on the technology readiness level, that scale from 1 to 9, as long as it's not commercialized yet, we can access R&D grants at any time in between. Typically not when it's just in the conceptual phase, but if you've already begun R&D activities all the way up to the point just before commercialization, we can usually tap into R&D grants for that. So so that one is a little more forgiving in terms of timelines.
Right. But hopefully you've caught it. Well, there's still enough expenditure remaining in the project.
Exactly. And the thing about R&D grants, typically what those costs go towards for those grants would be, employee salary. So, if you have engineers or whatnot working on it, it'd be employee salary, subcontractor costs, materials that you're using for testing, very similar to the SR&ED tax credit, but again, grant forward facing. But that one's a little more forgiving in terms of timelines. Yeah.
Our fourth item on our checklist, expansion into U.S. or foreign markets. I guess it's now more foreign markets than...
Yeah, you know what, though?
The climate?
It's interesting that you said that, because that was that can export program that I mentioned before. The trend that we saw with applications, that there were faster acceptance rates with companies that were targeting European and other worldwide markets as opposed to the U.S.
Well, you can see that aligns with now our government agenda.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess that would make sense.
Absolutely. So that one ongoing, I'd say, for that one, typically, I'd say to access those types of programs, as long as less than 10% of your revenue is coming from that international market that you're targeting, then it's A-okay to go for.
Yeah. Interesting. Our fifth item on our checklist is, we've talked about already a little bit, but looking out for use of co-ops and interns. I think we've covered that.
Yeah. So that one, again, ongoing as well, and one of the ones that we can go backwards on. So, and again, no limit whether it's one co-op or you want to take on 15 or 20 of them. So,
yeah. Our next one, item 6 on our checklist, green upgrades or sustainability projects.
There's a couple of programs that come around. I know that a couple of years ago, it was a lot more prevalent than it is right now. The focus last year from the government seemed to be surrounding AI in home building. Huh. That would be more, I'd say, on the tax credit side, which we have a division that can assist with. But there are some green grants as well, although I've had clients disappointed at times to see certain things such as solar wasn't very popular to fund for green the green grants that we deal with. So
that's kind of passé now.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So for accounting firms, for example, a lot of us still have a lot of paper, but going paperless, the software involved and just the effort to, scan and digitize your paper records, is anything like that?
It can be. It all comes down to energy consumption, if we can quantify that to the program, right? So how much energy are we using now when we implement, go digital, or we put in these LED lights, or, we put in this new system that's a lot more efficient? As long as we can quantify, this is how much we were expending in energy before, and this is how much energy we'll be saving, that's how we would measure that and qualify it.
Is it simple or is it abstract? You know, like to me, it's like, okay, well, here's our 12 hydro bills.
Yeah.
You know, is it that simple?
Typically the vendors that they're engaging to make those implementations will have numbers that they can provide for what it would look like.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then the last item on our checklist is major reorganization and growth events. And I guess what I'm thinking about there is the environment we find ourselves in right now in terms of tariffs and how businesses are having to respond to that.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that would be a great trigger to look out for if a company is looking to diversify in terms of markets that they go after. You know, if they're looking to reshore operations, if they're looking at new domestic supply chain avenues, things of that nature, kind of, you know, large impact changes to the organization.
So this isn't a Section 85 rollover that the government's going to pay for us.
No, it's not.
Okay.
No. But that would be a trigger for that. So, and what we're going to be seeing is a lot of programs kind of catered to that shift. And a lot of funding will go towards assisting organizations in doing this, just again, because of the political climate and in response to dealing with that. So,
do you rely a lot on the documentation that accounting firms provide, or is there things that you can alert a firm to say, here's what we would need in tracking information to streamline the reporting?
We definitely rely on them. So more often than not, these programs will require financials. Some of them don't, some of them do. Mm. But they, at the very least, they need to be accountant reviewed financials. So,
okay. Now, when you say reviewed,
yeah,
that's a key word. Now, when you, you're talking, a review engagement or an audit report return? Or is a compilation engagement sufficient?
Usually an audited financials would be, of course, the ones that they prefer the best. Review engagement is iffy for certain certain programs that we target. Wow. But if you have audited financials, then
The cost of
because that's that, extraordinarily
high.
And that's becoming less and less frequent.
It is frequently
done by smaller businesses,
of
course.
Absolutely. So, I've had situations before where, that we wanted to target a program and they're like, oh, we don't have that specific program required audited financials and they didn't have that. And usually that's with some of those larger programs.
Sure.
And again, the reason for that being is, you know, we're seeking, you know, a $500,000 plus, you know, interest-free loan from the government. So they do want to see those concrete
financials.
So I guess
on our checklist, we got to, you know, we're thinking if a company is doing a review engagement right now and they're looking at applying for grants, maybe they've got to consider is the reporting and the assurance report that's being given sufficient, or is that going to be a problem, or do we have to upgrade to an audit for
We finally found something that's in it for us, because we can't take a referral fee, but we can upgrade their statement.
But what I always say though is just, you know, ask beforehand if we're targeting, hey, this is what we're looking. This is the project that we have. This is way before we even identify a program. Hey, this is kind of what our budget looks like. This is what we want to go move forward with project wise this year, purchase wise. And we'll kind of give a checklist of what's needed to pursue those programs.
I mean, that when you think about it, that's like almost the first question.
Yeah.
Second question thing.
Yeah.
Is it possible we qualify for this or this or this grant? Yes. Okay.
And then what's
here's our statements.
Yeah.
And again, that's for those larger CapEx programs. If we're dealing something like hiring, training programs, anything like that, you don't have to worry about anything that, right?
Sure.
So
Okay. Very good.
Let me just drill down a little bit more on that, because I think that, you know, especially for firms that might be watching this, there's fewer and fewer firms that are doing any assurance work.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of them are a lot of firms are getting out of it completely.
Right.
So, I lost my train of thought.
What's the workaround around that? Like if I've got a client or you've got a client, because we only do compilation engagement reports, right? We've got to be thinking, okay, who can we go to get our work audited, or is it a special engagement that just satisfies?
That compilation work for a high percentage of programs is fine. it's fine, right? It's just for you know, those huge capex ones sometimes that require those audited financials. So you know,
but it's a question to ask, right? It's to be aware,
because you could go through the whole process and then finally realize that, well, our statements don't meet the qualification and miss out.
And is that a question you would have on your as you're vetting these types of projects? If I'm saying, okay, well, find us some programs, are you going to be saying, well, what kind of report are we going to get in order to qualify for this?
Absolutely. So something that will identify early on when we're still going over the qualifying criteria for the company and the programs that we're looking to identify. But like I said, for the majority of time, that compilation work is completely fine. So it's just sometimes the odd time that those audited financials are required.
Right. Yeah. Now, how diligent is the government in reviewing all the paperwork surrounding a claim? I mean, when you put in the claim, are you sending them a stack of invoices, receipts? You account for every dollar spent that you're
Ivan, you're talking about when after a company's approved of a grant. Correct. Yeah. So you know what? That's great to get into the approval process and what it looks like. So I'd say the majority of programs work on a reimbursement basis. Some programs will front the money up front. If it's some of those larger CapEx programs, they'll maybe front the first year up front to get the project off the ground and going. But for the most part, it's reimbursement basis. So it is submitting receipts. And it now depends on the program. Some programs just have an annual reporting process. Some of them have a quarterly reporting process. But a lot of that's also negotiable in the contribution agreement. So what happens after you win a funding program, you've been approved, they'll send you a contribution agreement, which outlines the spend in kind of in line with what you put in the application. This is what you say you're going to spend. This is what we've approved. And then as the project progresses, you save those invoices and then do the reporting to release the funds back to you. And typically the programs, whether it's 50% of funds they reimburse or 30% or whatever you've been approved for. And then that's how they're released back to you. So
is it quick? Is the reimbursement quick?
Some programs are, some programs aren't. So it could be a lot. Some programs are a lot more tedious. A couple of the provincial ones have a very tedious reporting process. And other ones are very, very straightforward. You know, that can export one for international marketing is pretty straightforward. You do the reporting once a year after the project's complete, and it's relatively streamlined.
Now, who does the reporting?
Yeah.
Is it the client or you?
Well, it's an add-on service of ours, so they have a choice to engage for that or not with us. But yeah, so we would more than happily do it. Yeah.
So once we're jumping around here, but once a project is approved and funds are flowing, do you just step out and you're done, or do you monitor as it goes through? Like, what is your role throughout the process?
We're there every step of the way. I actually get upset at clients when they start engaging with their government contact after they've been approved without forwarding us everything first, because I've seen on multiple occasions where, you know, you'll shoot yourself in the foot. And we say, hey, we could have made these terms more favorable for you. Instead of when you started answering yourself, all correspondence forward to us, and we'll actually, you know, write a draft email for you or tell you how to respond to the program, because that matters. Because, you know, some companies are, hey, we've got this contribution agreement, we've won the funding, you know, yay, right? You know what I mean? And then they'll go and they'll start signing things here and there. No. We can still negotiate further, right? We can negotiate repayment terms. We can negotiate how you spend the funds, you know? And we always say, send it to us first. And does it look good if you're okay with this? Or, you know, if we want, we can try to, you know, get a better, you know, better deal here or better deal there. So yeah, there's always negotiations available for that.
It's like, you know, I always tell clients, do not speak to the tax department yourself.
Yeah.
Because I've had so many cases where a client didn't want to spend, you know, pay for an hour of my time. But
thank God
they'll talk and they'll answer questions. And
I never used to mention it before, but I always proactively tell them that now, Mike. And, you know, when we win the funding, any email that comes through from your contact there, forward it to us, and we'll tell you how to respond, right? So,
and in terms of process, because you're about, I guess, from your end, your job, is there somebody appointed then in terms of process? How does that work?
Yeah, there is. So at minimum, every file that we take on, we'll have two team members assigned to it on the consulting side. So I think we have right now 12 grant writers. You know, once we engage, we identify a program that we want to target, and we engage it'll get assigned to at least two team members, depending on the size of the file. And they're your kind of points of contact, you know, that are with you every step of the way through the app, through the project scoping phase, the application phase, the contribution agreement phase, and even the reporting phase after, if you engage with it in that service. So yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's the same people through the process.
Yeah.
Now, I got another question. Are there any grants of any sort that are not taxable?
Any grants that are not taxable? That's a good question, actually. I'm not too sure on that.
Have you ever seen one?
No, I haven't.
No? I'm just curious.
That's a good question. I am not too sure if there are any that are non-taxable.
Yeah.
Oh, I can get back to you on that. So,
yeah, it'd just be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Who knows? I mean, we didn't know about
any
of this stuff coming up.
That's a good question. I am not too sure on that.
And so, just going back in terms of, because for those watching, whether you're in public practice or whether you're in industry, I guess the takeaway here is to be informed. And this is the challenge, right? To me, I run across this topic every couple of years, and I think to myself, yeah, you know what? I should look at that. And it's just in the busyness of our work, we forget about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Your newsletter is one way. What would you say to somebody who's a controller or a VP of finance in industry? Do they set some time aside in their calendar each year, just have a permanent standing item review opportunity with Eric?
Yeah.
Or...
Sure. I always say when you build out your budget for the year, that's when you should have a conversation with me, because when we have an idea of what your spend looks like, that's where we can identify programs that'll be a fit for that spend, right? So, usually when you're building out your annual budget would be a good time to have that conversation, because then we can take a look at, what's a fit. Yeah.
So do you maintain any type of a database, or if a company can, we'll call it, register with you, almost saying, okay, I'm in the paper business and, you know, this is our basic operation, and just leave that information on file with you. And if something pops up that may be relevant to them, or at least specific to that industry, let's say, you would contact them. Is that type of thing you...
Absolutely. And that's part of the proactive approach that we take. So we can get companies set up in our system that when a new program comes out, we will enter the program into the system, and any company that's eligible for that program will be flagged, and then we can go and we can email or reach out via whatever method it might be to let them know, hey, this just came out, it's relevant to your industry, your company qualifies for it based off of, incorporation date, minimum employee count, full-time employees. So we have a great system in place where if you enter into our system, then you'll get, there'll be triggers that'll let us know.
Now, you mentioned about incorporation date. Why is that important?
Yeah. So the majority of the programs require companies to be incorporated. It's very limiting as a sole proprietor, to qualify for these programs.
So can I just go and incorporate a company, then qualify for funding, or is there a minimum period?
For some programs, I'd say to be safe, for the majority of programs, other than hiring programs, which require no minimum incorporation, R&D programs, 1 year incorporation, those CapEx program, 3 years of incorporation. Yeah. So I'd say at least after 1 year of incorporation, it starts to open the doors a little bit more. And then after 3 years, you're pretty much fully eligible incorporation wise.
So when they look at incorporation date, do they also look at whether the company was active or not during that period of incorporation?
Revenue generating is usually a qualifying criteria.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So you can't just pick a shelf company
and
roll your assets into it. And
Yeah.
So it's kind of conflicting, like that logic, right? Because government is like attacking corporations, right? Because corporations are all bad.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they won't give you any money. You have to incorporate.
I think from their point of view, it's just a way of minimizing risk. If they're going to be lending out money, they want to see a certain level of establishment first, I guess, would be their logic that they're viewing it from. But
are there any top reasons that you're seeing where applications get denied? Like, what are the causes of those that are most common that can be avoided?
Yeah.
If we know about it.
I say not being aligned with, oversubscription could be one. Right. If the program has limited funding, but they receive, you know, X amount of applications, yeah, that always makes it less, you know, lower chances of success. But usually it would just kind of be errors in not aligning the application with the priorities that the program is looking for, right? So a huge part of it is you can build out a budget and you can have, hey, what we want to do is a fit for this program. But if you're not speaking the language that they're looking for on these applications, yeah, then, you know, you'll find yourself at the bottom of the pile pretty quick.
So in cases where a program opens up and there are multiple applications for it, and you've got all qualified companies and applications that would be qualified, do they? Is it a first in, first out type processing? Or if they say, okay, you know, 10 came in at the same time today, we've got X dollars, we're going to just spread it among them so everybody gets a little bit less?
Yeah.
Or how do they deal with
that? That's a great question. Being first in the door is always beneficial. Even if, so you'll have programs that are open in terms of, open-ended in terms of intake. There's no deadline. It's until the funds are funds have all been exhausted. You have programs that are open, you know, June 15th to July 15th. But even those programs that have a beginning and an end to the intake, it's always beneficial to be first in the door when the funds are flush. Mm-hmm. Always, right? Because we find that towards the end, they're a little more choosy because they're trying to space the funds out as much as they possibly can. Being first in the door is always mm-hmm. beneficial. So yeah, I'd say that that plays a huge benefit. So and that's part of the review process would be being first in there is always
right.
Kind of
thing. So if you're you know, close to the end in terms of coming in, would they, if it's, let's say the grant is up to $50,000,
yeah,
but they've got a couple of people there, so would they, you know, could they say, okay, we like this application better than that one, you're getting 50, you're getting nothing?
Sure.
Or would they say, okay, you get 25 each?
I say they'd probably go 25 and 25 more often than not, just really? To try to space it out. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But we've also had instances where they'll reach out and they'll we'll submit an application and they'll tell us that the funds have all been allotted to withdraw the application and wait to the next intake. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. Because especially for those large CapEx programs, when you go and apply, you can't, if you're denied, you can't go and apply for the same project again on the next intake period. So they'll reach out to us and they'll say, we recommend withdrawing this. So
you
can go and use that. You can go and apply again with that same project because, hey, we've pretty much dispersed all the funds at this point. Wow. If you actually go and submit it, you can't go and submit for that project again.
Yeah,
so but they'll let you know that. But I'd say, yeah, when they're getting towards the end, you'll see a lot more smaller funds divvied out as opposed to like a large project that they go and fund.
Yeah. Divvying up. Is there any platforms or tools that firms can use, either firms or people in industry can use just to track program applications and funding? Like,
yes.
What do you suggest?
So most of the programs will have an internal portal that you have to sign up and register for that'll allow you to track the progress of it. Okay. Yeah. So most of the time they'll have something in place, and a lot of times they'll just reach out and say, can you kind of find out what's going on with this or what's going on with that? And we'll reach out to the program directly for them.
I remember looking at one a couple of years ago and I found the app. I'm just thinking of the application now. The application was onerous to fill out. And then when I talked to MentorWorks at the time, there was a fee associated with you guys doing it. And I think at the time it was around $5,000 or something or other like that. And I thought, okay, well, that's a fair chunk of change. So for smaller types of entities, just that application process can be, you know, I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's going to take forever.
Yeah, it's
or
hugely,
recovering the information in order to complete it.
Yeah, it's hugely tedious. And, you know, we work with our clients in a lot of different capacities as well. And sometimes for these smaller organizations, you know, that are just starting off, what we can do as well, I mean, if they we'll work with our clients in whatever capacity they want. So if they, a lot of them, you know, will write in-house their applications, we can review it, do a review engagement for them, just to make recommendations and some changes for them for a fraction of the cost to what it would normally be as well. So that's also an option.
I'm just clarifying review engagement as in your idea of a review engagement is different than our
review engagement in the grants world would be us reviewing their application. <That's Remember? laughs>
So the Trump tariffs. Were you gonna?
Yeah, just job. I just want to the people reviewing the applications. Mm. Is it the government themselves, or do they outsource that function?
No, it's them. It's them themselves. Yeah, yeah. So you'll have like a designated rep that basically gets assigned to you when you go and apply, and they're your point of contact going forward, and they're the ones that are reviewing it. Yeah. So
For any grant, for any program in particular, is there any online resource that the company can go on and check and see, okay, what, you know, there's this much left of this program, or that's all behind the scenes? No. And we would have to sort of go through you to pull out.
Yeah, or you can reach out to the program yourself. We have contacts and relationships that we built there, so it's, you know, we know to go for a direct answer, but they don't publicly just go and post that. They'll sometimes make like smaller announcements on the actual government website, due to oversubscription, blah, 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 right? But they don't say, hey, you know, there was $50 million, there's only $5 million left. It's you go on, update, closed, right? So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Right. Now, about the ongoing Trump tariffs, what's the impact of that on grants, government grants?
Oh.
Are there certain sectors that are being hit? Like, we could just devote a whole podcast to this, I imagine.
I can go into this for another like 45 minutes to an hour. So, like I mentioned earlier, I was at that conference yesterday where Melanie Jolie was speaking. Kind of got an idea of where funding is going to go towards, and a lot of it has to do with tariff response, right? Yeah. So the whole issue that we're seeing right now, and she mentioned that we'll see a lot of it being allotted towards automotive, steel, and aluminum, the sectors that the industries that were biggest hit. But that doesn't mean that that's exclusive to those industries. So what we're seeing, there was a provincial program called the Ontario Together Trade Fund, actually. It opened up about a month and a half ago now, and it's still open for intake. And that's open to all industries. And what that program is meant for is for industries that are, like I mentioned before, maybe pivoting operations because they've been either directly or indirectly impacted by tariffs, market diversification, more interprovincial, trade and expansion, things of that nature. So even if a company hasn't been directly impacted, that would make for the strongest cases. Hey, you know, we're 30% down this time as opposed to the same time last year. But even if a company is like, you know, hey, one of our suppliers, major suppliers, you know, we're going to have to reroute, you know, our supply chains or diversify markets, a lot of the funding programs, and we're expecting to see, I made another friend at the event yesterday who worked for FedDev Ontario, and he said, you know, stay tuned because in the next month or so, we're going to see a lot of programs opening up, and a lot of them will be catered around tariff relief. So,
and so hospitality industry, would that be one? Because I mean, that can be hit. There's not Americans coming, for example, to hotels now.
Yeah, yeah. It all depends on what they're looking like. Yeah. You know what they're looking to do, but there also are, and this would be more on the tax credit side as well. But there are tax credits towards going for tariff relief or impending layoffs and things of that nature. Yeah. So if you are kind of facing that situation, then there are certain credits that you can access as opposed to grants, right? So.
And do you get involved in any tax credit?
We have a division that does it.
You did
it? Yeah, yeah. So it would be my area of expertise. But at our office, we do have a division, that would deal more closely with the tax credit. So,
anything else on the Trump tariff scene that you want to talk about or not? You said you could go on for an hour, so here's your chance.
Absolutely. So like I said, both on the federal provincial side, I mean, typically the busy season for grants for what we see is this spring in the fall, like I mentioned to you before, but due to the provincial elections that happened, and then that snap federal election really delayed a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And then the whole political climate really kind of shifted where funding will be allotted to. So I think that what we'll see now is a great time to have a conversation, because I think what we'll see is over the course of the summer, a lot of smaller programs opening up. So you don't have to be going and have this, $1 million, project where, you're pivoting your manufacturing, your suppliers. There's going to be smaller programs that come out, that'll cater to smaller companies as well. Mm. These smaller $50,000 grants to assist with this little thing, or $100,000 grant to assist with that, as opposed to these large CapEx ones. So, and most of it will be catered around, tariff relief, but we'll also see the same trends as last year. I know for a fact, because it was mentioned at the conference yesterday, AI and home building as well. So, it'll be, those are the trends that we're going to see with the upcoming programs over the course of the summer and the fall.
And people sign up for your newsletter to look for more industry specific information on that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have something called a funding portal on our website too, where you can go and enter information about your company, where you're located, employee size, incorporation date, industry that you're in, and it'll let you know a list of available programs for you too. So it's a pretty good tool that we have as well.
So we'll put those links on webinar. We were talking a little bit earlier about staff training. If we're generating content for firms or companies for their staff,
yeah.
And so, is there anything available, because it is technical? It's Canadian content. Is there any types that you're aware of? Any programs where there can be funding for that type of production?
There's certain programs, and again, they're more niche. There's Canada Media Fund, and there's certain programs released through that can go towards certain things like media production and things of that nature, content creation.
Yeah.
Usually those programs come around once a year for a very short period of time. Yeah. They're a lot more niche, but it is out there. And again, it all depends on what you're doing and what the business case is for the project. Yeah, but they do come out there. Program specific wise, I have a hard time remembering off the top of my head what a couple of them are called, but they are out there. So
isn't that typically though just in the entertainment area as opposed to
not specifically, and again I mean it would all come down to what the business case would be. So what is the purpose of what you're looking to do? If it does lead to hiring or whatnot, right? It's all about the business case, and the government loves to see hiring. If the end goal is, hey, this will account to two or three new employees, right?
Then right. So maybe there is hiring funding and then training or the costs of training them built into these types of programs.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually those are eligible costs as well for those types of programs too. So
such an interesting area.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap for certain programs as well. So, like I said, there's training programs, but even those CapEx programs, we can include training costs into that as well. You can include labor costs as well as some hiring costs. So there's a lot of overlap, but there's a lot of niche programs out there as well, right? So, that's why I'll say what I said again before. If you have a project in mind where it's going to cost you, there's a spend involved, reach out to us and we'll see if we can identify a program that'll support that project.
Well, we'll make sure your contact information is made available here. And thanks so much. This has been such an interesting conversation.
Eh? It has.
Yeah, really appreciate you having me. Yeah, this has been it's been a lot of fun. And again, there's just so much information, kept it high level for today, but there's a lot of detail. So, I'm always open to having a call with anybody to dive deeper into anything that they want to know. So
very good, Eric. Well, we got through the conversation. I didn't call you Ryan. I was concerned I'd call you Ryan instead of Eric. So.
I know, I mentioned happens all the time on a weekly basis, at least, usually via email. Thanks, Ryan. No problem. It's all right.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for your time today. And we've enjoyed our conversation. And for those that are watching, the contact information for Eric and Ryan LLC is available here, along with the location to sign up for the newsletter.
Yep, the newsletter. And I'll send you the funding portal as well, because that's a good tool for companies to see what they might be eligible for.
Well, we hope you found today's podcast interesting and informative. And stay tuned for upcoming subjects, equally interesting, we hope.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast, because we'll be coming out with new content pretty much every month as we go forward.
And if there's a topic that people are interested in, let us know.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, everyone. Enjoy your day. Take care now.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.